Opinions expressed in this program are for general information purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. Bulwark Capital Management is an investment advisor representative of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
Welcome to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham on AM 770 KTTH. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Know Your Risk Radio is brought to you by Bulwark Capital Management, helping families navigate the ever-changing and often treacherous financial markets. Know Your Risk Radio starts now. Here's your host, Zach Abraham.
Thank you so much for joining us. If you have never heard it before, as I say every week, don't turn us off. It's not a replay of Rush or Medved, unfortunately. We always talk about that. For those of you just joining, I get it. You tune in on the weekends. I'm no different. I'll usually have the car just set to KTTH. And you're hoping to catch a little weekend action of Rush or Medved. Maybe you missed a little something and you turn it on. You're like, who's this Yahoo screaming at me about finance? But anyway, as we say, it's the most scintillating hour of finance radio. It's a bit self-indulgent, I agree, but we got to pep it up, right? We got to make this interesting. And it is to me. It always is. I always look forward to this hour of the week because it's a blast. The other thing is it's cathartic. You get to verbalize. I'm getting sarcastic looks from Darren here already. Come on, hold it together, pal. it's cathartic. You get to verbalize all the stuff that you've got going on over the week and talk it over, and kind of feels like you guys are my therapist. Hopefully I'm offering some help for you. So before we even get started, though, as always, great show. And we always start with the market update, but I've got to go to something I looked at extensively last night. Again, we record the show on Friday, so this was Thursday night, and the Peter Stroke, what a creep. Did you see the video? We're on KTTH, right? I try to keep religion and politics out of it. Not that I'm not quote unquote religious. I don't consider myself religious, but my faith is very important to me. And politics have always been a passion as well. But I consider myself to be level headed. I'm very much on the conservative libertarian side, but I try not to buy into doctrines, and I try to think independently, just because, you know, either side of the argument can be wrong at any given time. And part of that leads me to what I was saying about Peter Stroke or Struck or whatever the heck his name is, maybe I'm offending anybody of Russian heritage out there, but it struck me. It seems kind of a Russian name, right? An Eastern Bloc type name. Maybe he's the Russian plant. But anyway, and part of that is not believing that people on the other side are evil, but boy, that makes it hard. That guy was like a comic book villain. I saw the replay of the video, and I thought it was doctored. I was like, somebody manipulate. Yeah, you got it down. I wish we had a video. Darren's, that's scary, actually. I think I like you a little bit less after you did that. And, you know, all the talk about the deep state, you know, I'm inclined to believe that, but holy smokes. And to think this guy was elected or picked or chosen to be on the Mueller investigation. I mean, that's just shocking. And then he has the gall to stand up there and say there's no bias. And then the liberals in Congress come to his aid. I mean, I just literally sat there with my jaw dropped watching that video over and over, and it was like a horror show. As a matter of fact, I saw a GIF on the internet where somebody put that video next to the scene out of Silence of the Lambs where the guy's down in the dungeon dancing in front of the mirror.
Buffalo Bill,
right. He's on it, people. Best producer in the business right there. Side by side. The other one, and it was eerily creepy. Go look at, I mean, it was just creepy. Then the other one was a picture of that sweet little look on his face right next to Gomer Pyle from Full Metal Jacket, Private Pyle, right? When he went, you know, Full Metal Jacket, he does his whole Pyle thing in the bathroom. That was a dead ringer too. And I was sitting there going, what in the world is going on? And these people are running around worried about fascists, right? It's fascism. Holy smokes. Anyway, that's my political rant for the day, but it was disturbing. And the guy sitting up there talking about ethics, talking about defending his country. Meanwhile, he's come out and said that he wants to tilt an American election, all the while cheating on his wife. And he's sitting there throwing ethical barbs at Trump. I mean, politics aside, that's one of the most disturbing. Anyway, boy, I could go on and on about that. But that's not why you tune in. Well, tune in. Again, it's the these weekend finance shows or the programs of default. I get it. But we're going to get into the finance stuff. I couldn't go on without airing that one. That just blew my mind. Anyway, market seems calm if you're looking at it this week from a 30,000-foot view, but there's a lot of interesting things going on, and we had a great conversation with Kevin Muir about this a couple weeks back, talking about, look, all the concerns that we've been talking about on the radio for the last 2 years, 2.5 years, whatever it is, they're all still very much in play. We got to understand the fact that we are investing in the most expensive market in U.S. history. And for those who heard the show before, I'm not going to go off on a value rant, so just hang with me here. But valuations, we're looking at by far the most egregious debt setup in the history of finance. The lowest interest rates in the history of finance, right? We're looking at a lot of issues. The other thing is that we're seeing is this bifurcation of the economy. And what I mean by that is we're seeing the top levels of the economy that has been so good for the top 1% does seem to be slowing. And you can see that in New York. Recent study came out with Manhattan penthouses and what they call, 1% type properties. I believe that's with sale prices above 10 million or maybe the number is 7.5 million. But those have meaningfully slowed down to the point where there's too much inventory. And you're seeing the signs of that slowing down. At the same time, you're seeing real growth in what I would describe is the rest of the 95%, our economy. You're seeing it in unbelievably strong truck orders. You're seeing it in, unemployment continues to be strong. I mean, you guys are watching the news. You're seeing it. Now, the odd thing about it, and I don't know why it surprises me, because things have been odd for 10 years, and we're going to discuss that in a segment coming up, the last segment we're going to do today. And it's going to be called The Matrix, We Took the Red Pill. That's a good title. I was really, really enthused about that. No, The Blue Pill, excuse me. The Blue Pill. Got to think about that red-blue, right? Blue bad, red good. You guys know what I mean. and we're going to talk about this strange bifurcation that's occurred in the economy and all these anomalies that have been created over the last 10 years. But it's really, really bizarre. You're actually seeing things heat up in the normal sector of life. A lot of my clients are small business owners. One of them I was just spending some time with the other day. He owns a road construction company, and they're just booming. And it doesn't seem to be a late cycle boom. There's acceleration. And being the responsible people that small business owners are, they got very lean over the last 10 years. So there's not a lot of debt. There's not a lot of overhang, which are things that we look at toward the end of the cycle. Now, the flip side to all of this, if you're listening to me talk about positive things, if you're listening to my conversation that I had with Kevin Muir, let's see, what was that, 2-3 weeks ago? You're probably sitting there going, well, Zach, you're contradicting everything you've said for the last 2 years. It was you know, doom and gloom. Well, yeah, there was that. I agree. But you never heard me call to drastically reduce your equity holdings. You never heard me call to sell them. We were not market timing. And this is exactly why. But if you remember what I said, and I actually went back and before we did the show, I went and read some of the transcripts just to make sure I wasn't talking out of school. What I said was there's no way the economy gets to 4% growth, even with tax cuts and all that kind of stuff, unless there's a pickup in inflation, okay? So what I'm talking about, and if it sounds like I'm covering my tracks, you got me. I am a little bit. But going back, but not really. Going back to what I was saying was we will not see 1955 to 1965 type growth where we're cruising along at 2.5% to 3.5% with next to zero inflation. It's just not going to happen. And what we're also seeing are those signs of inflation that we've been talking about pretty regularly for the last 6 months. They're becoming more tangible every single day. We're seeing it in the increase of price in metals. We're seeing increased price for manufacturers and producers of goods. We're seeing oil prices remain strong and again continue to show significant upside pressure. WTI's West Texas Intermediate crude is hitting, right, it's just flirting with the $72 level, 73, 74, I believe is a short-term ceiling on that. So it's got some overhead pressure on that price. But you're seeing the signs of inflation pick up. So we're creeping above that 2% level, and we're also creeping toward that 4% GDP level. So, look, things are stronger out there than I thought. Than I thought it could be. There's no question about that. But that caveat that I threw in there about inflation picking up, that remains true, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, it's not going to end well. You know, the outcome for this has never been a positive one, and it won't be. I think Trump is doing an incredible job of managing it as best as he can. I'll certainly give him credit for that. I've been a big critic of some of the things he said, and I want him to put the Twitter down, but you got to give credit to where credit is due. And, you know, I think he's come in here and done a great job of assisting the economy in every way he possibly can. And it's having a bigger desired effect. One of the things that I, before we move on from this topic, one of the things that I'd be remiss if I didn't discuss is what it illustrates, what these tax cuts illustrate And look, you've probably heard me. Maybe there's some confusion there. I've had Mark Yusko on the show week before. And he discussed the tax cuts. He calls it kleptocracy. I agree with him in a budget sense, but I disagree with him in the sense where if we're going to bail things out, and inadvertently talking about another subject, it's client question of the week. We're going to discuss the bank bailouts again. I know that's history, but... but if we're going to bail things out and we're going to add to the deficit, why is it okay to do it with QE and bank bailouts, but not with a tax break? And so I understand what Mark's saying from a fiscally responsible corner of the room or position. I disagree with it because all of a sudden we're going to dig our heels in on budgetary matters when it comes to tax cuts. The other thing it illustrates that we all know, right, going back to Reagan's time, is it never ceases to amaze me. When you cut regulation, you cut tax, the biggest beneficiaries of it are small business. And that's important because small business, although it may not get the press, it provides something like, I want to say 60% or slightly more than 60% of the employment in the United States. It still is the engine of growth. And that, you know, that and the mindset surrounding that, the foot that the Obama administration had on the back of small business. And look, I'm not saying intentionally. I'm not trying to bash on Obama here. But if you look at everything he did, he increased a lot of regulations. And the argument is, hey, it's fair. It's across the board, right? Now, we've talked about that on the show before. Regulations disproportionately harm small businesses. If you're a global company or a multinational company, and you get increased regulations in, let's say, Nevada, you can reroute 2%, 2.5% of your business globally into other states around it and instantly account for that increased cost that that regulation presented to your business. If you're a local business in Nevada, there's nothing you can do. You just immediately lost a competitive edge. And that's one of the biggest drivers of what we've seen is this conglomeration, these big, huge companies swallowing up smaller companies. And I think it's also been one of the biggest reasons you haven't seen wage increases. Look, this doesn't get talked about enough either. But when you see a lack of wage increases, they're always going to talk about economics. They're going to talk about all these big problems. But if you want to get down to brass tacks, what is a lack of rising wages? It's a lack of competition. Plain and simple. If we've got five companies vying for labor as opposed to 20, you're going to see lower wages. Right? If we have a market full of 10 people versus a market full of 1,000, you're going to see lower prices. There's less competition. And that brings us to our, man, we've got a good docket of interviews coming up. We really do. We got Jonathan Tepper coming up. Not today. He's going to be in 2 or 3 weeks. He just finished a book called The Myth of Capitalism. He's written several books. I've got to go back and I've read a couple of them. The titles are, I'm just blanking out. But we're going to have him on and The Myth of Capitalism and what he's taught, what he means by that. He's a capitalist. But what he means by that are these regulations that we just discussed that disproportionately harm small business and this encouragement via low interest rates of consolidation, right? Remember, and what I mean by that is if we make interest rates lower, it disproportionately advantages the guy with the biggest balance sheet. And what does he do? He goes out and buys other companies. This consolidation, you know, you see Amazon swallowing up companies left and right, Whole Foods, right? These monopolies, these oligopolies being created in the marketplace are one of the biggest issues that we're facing, and it really threatens capitalism. And the irony of all that is during the last presidential election cycle, one of the things I was talking about is what this country really needs is a Teddy Roosevelt. And I said that on the air as well. And the thing that really shocks me, there's big differences, don't get me wrong, but the thing that really shocks me is Trump is sort of a Teddy Roosevelt. Right, his allegiance is really if you block out the hyperbole constantly coming in from the left, the extreme left especially, and if you just look at what Trump does, the guy is no extreme conservative. Neither was Teddy Roosevelt. But one of the best things Teddy Roosevelt did was really enforcing and swinging the axe of regulation in the sense of the antitrust laws. And I'm really hoping, and Trump has alluded to this by talking in a disdainful manner about Amazon.com, a company I incredibly respect, but I agree with him in this sense, that these companies have gotten too big. We need another round of antitrust legislation. And so we're going to talk about that with Jonathan Tepper here in a couple weeks. Brilliant guy. And I'm excited. We've got, God, and then next week we've got the chief investment officer of the Santiago Capital Fund based out of San Francisco, hedge fund manager, brilliant guy. Got a lot of good stuff on the docket. So anyway, getting back to things, not much on the underlying has changed, but there is extreme strength in that 95% of the economy, right? The weakness is coming into the 1%. And I just think it's fascinating how when we lower, we get out of the way. And it's, look, it's even impacted our business. There was a rule called the fiduciary rule, the DOL rule that was coming down in the financial garbage. Horrible rule. You could tell intentions, as most laws are, but it was harmful to people that were doing things the right way, and it was beneficial to people that weren't. Not on purpose. But he deep sticks that. So he's even helped out our industry. And it just never ceases to amaze me, the brilliance and the resilience of American small business. So anyway, we got to take a quick break. That's okay. There really is nothing to discuss other than if you're out there and you listen to the show for a set source of information, and you manage your own money, Look at small businesses. And I'm not telling you to go out and buy a small business index. There's no recommendations. But I think the growth going forward for as long as it lasts is going to be toward the bottom end of things. I think these massive conglomerates pushing the indexes, I think we're close to run our course. And we've been talking about how overvalued they are. The momentum in that side of things is slowing down. But man, it is not the market. Especially on the smaller end of things. So stick with us. Have a great show. We're going to talk about client question of the week, bank bailouts. We're also going to talk about a new twist on the dirtiest word in investing, the downside to annuities. Yep, you heard me right. We want to make it fair, balanced. We want to talk about the downside to annuities. We're also going to talk about, I alluded to this already, the matrix. We took the red pill. Talking about that bifurcation we see in the economy and how it, you know, the impacts it's having. So as always, guys, if you're listening to this, and hopefully we're bringing real value, hopefully we're enlightening you to different ways of doing things, because we, you know Your Risk Radio, we bring that risk managed approach, and that's not just lingo, it's not just jargon, right? You know, the portfolios that we use, I don't want to talk about performance, but I kid you not, and we can prove it to you. Call us. Email us. The portfolios that we use significantly outperformed the traditional stock bond portfolios last year, in a year when the market was up 23%, and it actually made money during 08-09. We're not a guarantee it'll do it again during the next downturn, but what I'm saying is we can bring that risk managed approach, lower your cost, and not give up upside. And when you see it, you'll understand how. It's not voodoo. It's not magic. It's not a sale. Dory wouldn't buy into that. Dory Monson, you know, our most well-known client. So give us a call, 866-779-RISK. Go to the radio show website, knowyourriskradio.com. I'm speaking real fast because we got to take a break, and I went over the time. Big shock for Darren. Anyway, stick with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
This is Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham. Listen to Zach uncover the truth about the financial markets with simple and honest advice to help you plan for retirement. Get your free copy of Zach's new booklet, Common Sense Investing. Go to knowyourriskradio.com.
Hey, it's Dory Monson. I'm here with Brian Ott, host of Long Term Care Radio right here on Cairo every Saturday at 7. And Brian, before signing up for a plan, I attended one of your classes with my wife, learned how passionate you are about what you do and how you love to teach people about the importance of long term care planning.
You know, I really do love educating people, Dory.
Yeah, why is that?
Well, someone took the time to educate my grandmother about long term care, which meant she got the level of care she deserved, but it also meant my mom didn't have to give up her life to be a caregiver. You know, Dory, it taught me firsthand that long-term care planning protects you and the people you care about most.
Yeah, that's exactly why my wife and I put a plan in place with Brian and why I recommend you do the same. Start by joining Brian at his next long-term care planning class and learn about the most innovative plans available, like the one I got. It's going to pay me back whether I use it or not. Don't miss Brian's next class. It's coming up this Thursday at 7 p.m. in Bellevue. There are only a few seats left, so sign up today at 525longtermcare.com. That's 525longtermcare.com.
Stocks, bonds, and real estate are all at record highs. So why risk it? Hey, it's Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer of Bulwark Capital and host of Know Your Risk Radio. Call now and get our brand new version of Common Sense Investing. It's our complimentary booklet that shows you how you can protect your retirement portfolio against loss, but still participate in market gains. Safety doesn't have to mean lower returns. Our clients have increased their returns while being insured against loss. And like our client Dory Monson says, go from retirement hoping to retirement planning.
I am indeed a client, Zach, and I got to tell you, you have to read Zach's brand new version of Common Sense Investing. You'll learn how to protect your retirement against loss, but still participate in market gains. Call now, get your free copy, 866-779-RISK. That's 866-779-RISK, or go to knowyourriskradio.com. Bulwark Capital Management's a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
And we're back. Thank you for sticking with us. And if you're just joining us, we are going to continue our conversation. Just did the market update, and we want to get in a little bit out of order this week. Oh, by the way, for those of you that do listen every week, we had the big golf tournament last week. I told you about that, the cup. I fell victim to handicap. Now, I'm not making excuses, but I fell victim to handicap. I had the lowest gross score by about 20 strokes. So all the well wishes you guys gave me, they worked. But the handicaps were questionable at best. I was the only guy with a registered handicap. And so there was a lot of estimation going on. And anytime you play a handicap golf tournament, that's not good. Especially when you're the guy with the only guy with the established handicap. I got railroaded, man. Anyway, but I did win the low. I won low net. No, low gross. Excuse me. One low gross. 20 strokes ahead of number two. So
any prize for that?
Nope. Nope. Not even really pride, honestly, because I signed off on the handicap thing and I got, it was a bait and switch deal. And you gotta keep your friends close and your enemies closer. But when your friends are your enemies, you got to keep them really close. And I found out that these guys I thought were my best friends, many of them in my weddings, we sweat and bled together on the football field. And they did me dirty. But anyway, we had a great time. I'm sure none of you were sitting there this week going, well, I wonder how the golf tournament went. Anyway, okay, so we'll get on with it. We're going to do client question of the week now because I got it two or three times in the last, week and a half. And it's a topic I like discussing. Anyway, so bank bailouts. Now, we've talked about it a little bit on the show before, but I don't think we've ever done a segment on it. And there's so much disagreement and consternation about it. And I'm going to talk about it with Brent Johnson, the chief investment officer of the Santiago Fund, next week. And we're also going to talk to Jonathan Tepper about it because I want to get both their takes on it. But clients always tell me, yeah, those dirty bank bailouts, what's your take on it? Do you disagree with them too? And my answer is always yes and no. And they're always shocked by that because they're like, well, you're on KTTH. You should be against the bank bailouts, all that kind of stuff. If you ask me, if we look at bank bailouts, and for those of you that don't know what we're talking about, I'm assuming most of you do, but you know the bank bailouts that happened 2008-2009, about $1 trillion of capital was infused in the balance sheets of the bank. Mark-to-market accounting was suspended. What that did was give them a fixed value on a lot of these, both the credit default swaps and the collateralized debt obligations, so they quit dropping in price and they could actually stand up and defend their own balance sheet. To me, it's as with most things, should you bail out banks? No. Right? So just going to come right out of the gates. No. Because that enters in moral hazard. And what do we mean by that? That's a term that gets thrown around a lot. Moral hazard is when we set up conditions that encourage poor behavior. When we bail out banks, it's a guarantee that we'll have to do it again because the behavior that requires the bailout isn't penal. And if you load your balance sheet up with toxic garbage and it does what it will do every single time, it does the inevitable, which is tank. And the government steps in and bails you out, what's to stop you from doing it again? Nothing. And the other side of moral hazard is when you step up with $1 trillion of taxpayer money and you bail out a financial sector, you have to do it again. Right? You're in for a penny, in for a pound. And if you don't think it'll happen again, you're kidding yourself. Now, the flip side of the argument, in 2008-2009, they had to. Now, stick with me. Just stick with me here. They had to because of what they did in the Clinton administration. And I'm not putting it all on Clinton because, regretfully, it got approved by a Republican House and a Republican Senate. Remember, it's the old adage that is taxpayers and the citizens of the country, the only time we're safe is when government isn't in session. This is a perfect illustration of that point. But what they did, and there's some real inside baseball around this, and I'll try to unwrap it. In 1998, they repealed Glass-Steagall. Now, we've talked about this on the radio before, but never, like I said, never for a full segment. So if you've heard me talk about it, stick with me. but they repealed Glass-Steagall. And Glass-Steagall was a piece of legislation that was passed post, I believe it was part of the 1933 Securities and Exchange Act. And it may have been a different one. But anyway, it was put in place in response to the Great Depression and the bank failures. And what it did was it kept separate commercial banks, investment banks, just regular consumer deposit banks, insurers slash banks. It kept all those separate. So it said you can be one, but you can't be all or multiple. You got to pick. You can't have these conglomerates. And in the infinite wisdom, and I don't even believe it was them, I believe it was lobbying, and we'll get to that. But in the infinite wisdom of the Clinton administration, with the support of a Republican House, Republican Congress, they decided that this wasn't free market capitalism, that we should let these guys do whatever they want, and they repealed Glass-Steagall in 98. Now, another interesting piece of legislation they passed was, and I always forget the name of this one. I'm blanking out. I should have written it down. But I believe it was an addendum to the Community Reinvestment Act that was passed in 1977. Don't quote me on that one because I do always get it confused. But basically what that one said was that, And it was an addendum. It was a new law. So it wasn't like a reversal like Glass-Steagall. This was an addendum to an existing law. But it said that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which at that point I think were underwriters for, I want to say, 80%, 75% of the mortgages in the United States in the late 90s. And it said that 50% of all their loans issued had to go to subprime borrowers. So they overnight, in an artificial manner, changed the complete structure of the loan markets. The mortgage markets in the United States. So, interestingly enough, now going back to Glass-Steagall, now we're going to hop around a little bit, so hopefully I don't confuse you. But going back to the repeal of Glass-Steagall, the interesting thing about the timing of that was Sandy Weill, or Sanford Weill is his proper name, but everybody on the street referred to him as Sandy. He merged Insurance Travelers Group, or Travelers Group Insurance, with Citibank. And he did that about 3 or 4 months prior to Glass-Steagall being repealed. And I still remember it to this day. I was in late high school at that point. And I was a finance nerd clear back then. But at the time, it was a shock to everybody because he merged those two companies in direct violation of Glass-Steagall. And lo and behold, 3-4 months later, Glass-Steagall got repealed. And Sandy Weill was known as a real fox in terms of being cunning. It wasn't fortuitous that he did that and the law got repealed. He knew what was going on. As a matter of fact, I think the only explanation, right, Occam's razor, the most logical outcome or the most logical explanation often is, I think it would take a lot of faith to believe that he wasn't instrumental in repealing that rule in the first place. And then in that same year, like I said, you changed the lending standards in the housing sector. Okay, so both those laws happened in 98, and lo and behold, 9 years later, we have the greatest financial crisis since the Great Depression. If you think that's a coincidence, I got a bridge to sell you. Because I can tell you unequivocally, we may have had a recession, we may have had a real estate bubble, but neither of which would have come anywhere close to the magnitude that they were. Not even close. So the minute those laws were repealed, in my opinion, the government was on the line if it went south. Right? It's like leaving your gate open if you've got dogs that have the potential to be violent. And I didn't use pit bull on purpose because I happen to have a pit bull. Lucy passed away. Great dog. But she left us about a year and a half ago. But the sweetest, so kind to our kids. Anyway, I don't want to get off on a dog tangent here. But I specifically didn't say pit bull because I think it's the owner. It's not the dog. Anyway, I see how easily I get sidetracked. But it's sort of like the people that leave the gate open and the dog gets out. The dog doesn't get sued, right? We don't blame the dog. We blame the idiot owner. And that's what these guys did. They didn't leave the gate open. They took it down. Oh, the markets will regulate themselves, blah, 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 blah. And if you think about it, even prior to that, the real issue that was created by the repeal of Glass-Steagall was we already had moral hazard in the form of FDIC insurance. Why was everybody comfortable parking their money at Lehman Brothers or Goldman or JP Morgan? They were comfortable because of FDIC insurance. And they knew, they're not stupid, they knew that by combining the banks, they were buying themselves coverage because they could do business and transact business with the backing of regular people like you and me, the backing of our deposits. Right? That capital sat on their balance sheets. Now, they have regulations about it, you know, levering it and things like that, but there was already an existing moral hazard when they took down Glass-Steagall. Like I said, that was the equivalent of not leaving the gate open. It was the equivalent of removing the fence. And so at that moment, the minute that happened, and I wrote a term paper about it in college. The minute that happened, the other thing that's interesting about that, you guys remember WorldCom? Yeah, we're all old enough to remember WorldCom. You go ask the kids today, that nobody even remembers it, but WorldCom. WorldCom's another one. WorldCom would not have happened without the repeal of Glass-Steagall, and that's because you had that was Citibank as well. Was that Citibank? Yes. I'm almost positive. It was Citibank that was WorldCom's banker, and they were their real estate banker, they were their investment banker, they were their regular banker, and oh, by the way, a guy by the name of Jack Grubman just happened to be the lead analyst on their stock, who also worked for Citibank. And interestingly enough, he was a lead analyst on their stock, and he didn't drop a buy recommendation until the stock almost hit zero. Right? So you could see the conflict of interest all over the place. But Glass-Steagall was an absolute disaster. But the minute they did that, they broke the system. And it's like Colin Powell said about Iraq, you break it, you own it. And so do I believe in bank bailouts? No. But had they not done them under the structure that they set up when they repealed Glass-Steagall, it is not hyperbole. The whole system would have gone down. Now, would that have been beneficial in a cultural sort of way for us? I think it could have been. I think it could have been a great cultural reset. But unfortunately, in a democracy like ours, that's never going to be allowed to happen because the outcry is going to be so big that you're going to get radical people put into office, and all the people that are in there now are going to get elected out. And right, there's never going to be the political will to let something like that happen. So to summarize it, do I believe in bank bailouts? Should they have happened? No. But the decision was not made in 08-09. The decision was made in 98. The decision was made when the fence was removed. The decision was made when we artificially changed underwriting standards across the entire mortgage lending sector in one fell swoop. And as is typical with Washington, D.C., there was zero attention paid to the knock-on effects of legislation because they're the smartest guys in the room. Of course, they've thought of everything. And you can illustrate that by Ben Bernanke's quote in late 2005, early 2006, when he said the issues in subprime are contained. We don't need any advice from you. And if you want to read more about this, Daniel DiMartino Booth wrote a phenomenal book, and we've interviewed her on the show before, called Fed Up. Get it on your Kindle. Go buy it. It'll give you more insight to this. But I just want everybody to know, including people that I've talked to where I've said, no, I believe they should have done the bank bailouts. I wanted to add color to that because, of course, they shouldn't have. But the minute those laws were changed, the minute Glass-Steagall was repealed in the late 90s, they broke it. They owned it. They had a moral obligation at that point to step in there and fix the mess they had made. Now, can these things happen again? Yes. Which is why we deploy a risk management strategy. Which is why we do not build the same portfolios that everybody else does. And if you want to know how we do that, If you want to know how we're avoiding interest rate risks and bad performance with bonds, if you want to know how we're doing it at half the cost and half the risk of most portfolios out there, give us a call, 866-779-RISK. You can also go to the website, knowyourriskradio.com. It'll give you a lead to the Bulwark's website. You can email us questions. If you're not comfortable calling, you can email in and we'll do an email correspondence. But take the time to see what else is out there because we can. And Dory backs us up on this. If you trust Dory, which you should, he's a good guy. But this isn't just smoke and mirrors. We can provide a greater level of security, a greater level of protection at lower cost and better returns. Give us a call, 866-779-RISK, or go to the radio show website, knowyourriskradio.com. And also, you can go to the podcast page or on iTunes and listen to all of our previous, you know, segments that we've done and the interviews that we've spoken about, including Daniel DiMartino Booth, who I just referenced in her book, Fed Up. Anyway, stick with us. Got to take a quick break here. We're going to be right back to discuss the downside of the dirtiest word in investing. But don't go away. We'll be right back. This is Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
Do better in bull markets. Do better in bear markets. Pay less fees in all markets. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management. You can subscribe to Zach's free newsletter, The Bulwark Insider Report, at knowyourriskradio.com.
Stocks, bonds, and real estate are all at record highs. So why risk it? Hey, it's Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer of Bulwark Capital and host of Know Your Risk Radio. Call now and get our brand new version of Common Sense Investing. It's our complimentary booklet that shows you how you can protect your retirement portfolio against loss, but still participate in market gains. Safety doesn't have to mean lower returns. Our clients have increased their returns while being insured against loss. And like our client Dory Monson says, go from retirement hoping to retirement planning.
I am indeed a client, Zach, and I got to tell you, you have to read Zach's brand new version of Common Sense Investing. You'll learn how to protect your retirement against loss, but still participate in market gains. Call now, get your free copy, 866-779-RISK. That's 866-779-RISK, or go to knowyourriskradio.com. Bulwark Capital Management is a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, registered investment advisor.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
And we're back. Thank you so much for sticking with us. And I hope this doesn't sound contradictory. As I've mentioned many times on the show before, I really have no concept or clue about who our competition is. I really don't focus on it. I'm an ex-PLU football player. Frosty Westering was our coach. And I got taught back then to not focus on things outside of the outside of our control, right? Focus on the things that we control and leave the rest of it up to God or whatever. And so we've applied those principles to our business, and it's been incredibly successful. So anyway, I really don't have any knowledge except when I'm driving in the radio and hear different firms talking about different things. But the one funny thing I do is a lot of clients or potential clients shop us. They go talk to other people, which I get. It's fine. And almost every time they come back, they're like, oh, man, we got warned about you guys. And it always catches me up by who? And I don't even know who it is. I'm just like, oh, okay, well, if they're worried about us, I guess that's a good thing. And one of the most common things they say is they call us an annuity shop, right? Dirtiest word in investing. We talk about that. And I laugh about it because I'm a finance major who also a few credits short of an econ minor. And I've grown up in the industry and all I've ever wanted to do is manage money and via stocks. And as most of you know, again, who have listened to the show, we started using something called the fixed indexed annuity as a replacement for bonds in 2012. And the reason we did it is because they're cheaper, they're safer, and they make more money. Pretty simple. Than bonds do. And the whole reason we own bonds is for security and safety. Annuities are safer. And they cost less because they've got no management fees, no upfront costs, the kinds that we use. There are bad ones out there. And they give us 50 to 60% upside in the stock market. So on average, our clients, you know, make anywhere from 5.5% to 7%. Over the last 5 years since we started doing it, they've made even more. On average, there's some exceptions because of some different products that clients needed or wanted, but the types of annuities we're a fan of have done much better than that. And anyway, they've significantly blown the performance of bonds out of the water. And they also insulate our clients from the rising interest rates, right? Because rates go up, bonds go down. And what we've seen over the last 5 years is an increase in this, right? We were early to the game and we were pariahs for it. But now a lot of people are starting to do it because their clients are, you know, exactly what we said was going to happen with bonds has happened. Now, why do annuities have a bad name? There's a lot of different reasons. Part of the reason they've got a bad name is because bonds have been a phenomenal bet for the last 40 years. Interest rates have been going down. So as a bond holder, you've been making money both ways. You've been getting paid the coupon or the interest on the bond. And not only that, but the bond, the underlying security itself, has been increasing in value. So you're winning on both ends. And funny enough, bonds over the last 20 years have actually outperformed stocks straight up. But when does that end? It ends when rates hit zero. Okay, bonds aren't like stocks. They can't go up indefinitely. And I know when I'm saying this, this is going to go over some of your heads and you're going to forget it. And you're going to buy into somebody else that says, oh, that guy doesn't know what he's talking about. Bonds are great, blah, blah, blah. Okay, it just, they don't know what they're talking about. And I don't mean to say that in an arrogant way. I just, factually, bonds are not like stocks. They cannot go up indefinitely. They are intricately, and you cannot separate them from interest rates. Interest rates go up, bonds lose value. Interest rates go down, they increase. How do we know they're done gaining value? Well, when rates hit zero, right? It's pretty good indicator. So what is the downside to using these? Well, the downside is a new client of ours called into the show. And I reviewed his portfolio. And he had a substantial portfolio, well over $1 million. And the firm that he had gone with is a local firm, not going to name their names. Don't focus on the other people. Just focus on ourselves. But they took his entire portfolio and put it all in annuities. And said, you're going to get stock-like growth and this is a safer way to do it and blah, blah, blah. And funny enough, they spread it out over 6 different companies. Now, that's funny to me. Because usually in the world of annuities, there are 2 or 3 products at most that are sort of leading the way. That's why we change products all the time based on what the best offer is, because they're constantly tweaking their rates. And I sat there and looked at that and went, 6 different companies. And I was scratching my head going, why? And I'm looking at it and they're repeat. A lot of these different annuities they plugged in there were basically the same, just offered by different companies. And I was scratching my head going, why would they do this? And I was so perplexed by it that I actually called our wholesaler, the company that we get all of our annuities through. And he goes, oh, that's simple. And I go, what's simple? Why? And he goes, because when you submit too big a percentage, so let's say 35 or 40% of somebody's portfolio, I think the number is more like 65. But if you're going to submit too large of somebody's net worth into an annuity product, it raises red flags and the annuity company will kick it back. Well, the way you get around that is by splitting the money up into 5 or 6 different segments and sending it all out to different companies. So they were ripping the guy for commissions. And they were making the classic mistake that we've talked on this radio show about constantly. Saying, oh, this is a stock replacement. No, it is not. Annuities are bond replacements or bond add-ons. Maybe you still own some bonds, but the annuities make up half or 75% of your bond holdings or something like that. But over a long enough timeline, the annuity is never going to outperform stocks. And it's not going to give you the liquidity and the freedom of stocks. The annuity should be part of your portfolio. And I got to tell you, when I realized that and I had that discussion, it angered me. Because this is how the products get a bad name, because they're not used correctly and they're misrepresented to clients. If you're buying an annuity and you're expecting to make stock-like returns, you've been sold a bill of goods. It doesn't work that way. So if you're thinking about buying an annuity or you currently own one and you're not happy with it, before you surrender it, before you get rid of it, call us, 866-779-RISK. And if there's not something better you can do with that money, guys, listen, we're going to tell you. I actually advocated that this client kept the majority of his money in those annuities because the surrender penalties getting out of it were too penal. We're not just trying to pitch people. Right? We're trying to do the right thing. We do the right thing. The business side of it takes care of itself. And if you're thinking about buying one, don't trust everybody because there's a lot of hacks out there. They don't look at them from the fiduciary standpoint that we do. So give us a call, 866-779-RISK. And this to be said, don't let it scare you away from them. These can be great add-ons to your portfolio. Give us a call, 866-779-RISK, or go to the radio show website, knowyourriskradio.com. We got to take a quick break here. Be right back. We want to talk about the Matrix. We took the blue pill up next. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
This is Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham. Listen to Zach discuss key investment strategies across several asset classes, not just stocks and bonds. Get your free copy of Zach's new booklet, Common Sense Investing. Go to knowyourriskradio.com.
Hey, it's Dory Monson. I'm here with Brian Ott, host of Long-Term Care Radio right here on Cairo every Saturday at 7. And Brian, before signing up for a plan, I attended one of your classes with my wife, learned how passionate you are about what you do and how you love to teach people about the importance of long-term care planning.
You know, I really do love educating people, Dory.
Yeah, why is that?
Well, someone took the time to educate my grandmother about long-term care, which meant she got the level of care she deserved, but it also meant my mom didn't have to give up her life to be a caregiver. You know, Dory, it taught me firsthand that long-term care planning protects you and the people you care about most.
Yeah, that's exactly why my wife and I put a plan in place with Brian and why I recommend you do the same. Start by joining Brian at his next long-term care planning class and learn about the most innovative plans available, like the one I got. It's going to pay me back whether I use it or not. Don't miss Brian's next class. It's coming up this Thursday at 7 p.m. in Bellevue. There are only a few seats left, so sign up today at 525longtermcare.com. That's 525longtermcare.com.
Stocks, bonds, and real estate are all at record highs. So why risk it? Hey, it's Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer of Bulwark Capital and host of Know Your Risk Radio. Call now and get our brand new version of Common Sense Investing. It's our complimentary booklet that shows you how you can protect your retirement portfolio against loss, but still participate in market gains. Safety doesn't have to mean lower returns. Our clients have increased their returns while being insured against loss. And like our client Dory Monson says, go from retirement hoping to retirement planning.
I am indeed a client, Zach, and I got to tell you, you have to read Zach's brand new version of Common Sense Investing. You'll learn how to protect your retirement against loss, but still participate in market gains. Call now, get your free copy, 866-779-RISK. That's 866-779-RISK, or go to knowyourriskradio.com. Bulwark Capital Management's a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
All right, welcome back to the show. We got to get right into it because, as always, I went on a couple rants and got away from you a little bit. And we're talking about the Matrix. But before we get into that, I was looking at something during the break, and I find it endlessly ironic that Trump is being, and it, you know, I say that we don't want to get off on politics and religion, and we don't. It's a show on finance, but you'll notice that I infuse it a little bit every once in a while, and I got to blame my father for that. We had a saying at our house where if you come to dinner here, we only discuss politics and religion. A lot of spirited debate around the dinner table, as you can imagine. So I unfortunately, I've carried that forward, and you guys have to pay the price. But one of the ironies I found about this whole Trump being a fascist thing, right? He goes over to Britain and he says, I believe you're mishandling the Brexit because you're not adhering to the vote. You're violating the tenets of democracy. And the reason they're violating the tenets of democracy or the justification they give for it is because the voters didn't know. They know better as elites. Right? They're doing what's best for the people. And yet they turn around and then call him a fascist. It's fascinating to me. And all he's saying is honor the democratic process. I just, the cognitive dissonance of these people is amazing to me. And the hypocrisy. Anyway. Now, One of the things that I do not lend to, or I try to steer away from on purpose, is hyperbole. One of the things that drives me nuts is when people say things, especially in the world of finance, without context, right? An opinion without context is nothing. It's wind. It means nothing. So in this segment, talking about the matrix, we took the blue pill. What I'm talking about is something I referenced earlier, was this bifurcation of two economies. You've got the one economy for the one percenters or the elites, and then you've got the other economy for the rest of us, right? Things have been going great for the one percenters or the elites. I think we all know that, right? They haven't been going very well for the working class man. As a matter of fact, it's been some of the worst economic times in the history of our country over the last 10 years. Slower growth rates than we even had during the Great Depression when you look at real economic growth, growth minus inflation. But when we say they're bad, I want to make sure that it's not hyperbole, because a lot of people talk about, oh, Obama saved the economy, blah, blah, blah. Look, here's what saving the economy is. And when I say we took the blue pill, what I mean by that is we did something artificial in 2008, 2009. Now, I know I just got done saying that they should have done the bank bailouts because they had to. I didn't say there weren't negative knock-on effects. I just said that the crime was committed in 98, not 2008. But where that left us was, and if you guys remember this, Occupy Wall Street. Open talk by politicians and the electorate alike about quote-unquote free college. Increased racial divide. A record wage gap. A record wealth gap. When we make these statements, they're not hyperbolic. Those are the facts. They're undebatable. Now, how did all these bifurcations happen? Why are we seeing economic activity that is unlike and incomparable to anything else we've experienced in the history of our republic? It's because a massive infusion of artificial capital was executed in 2008, 2009. And this gets us to the matrix. We're still living in the matrix. We took the red pill. The blue pill. We chose to go back to sleep. And if it sounds like I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth, I kind of am, because there's really no other way to look at it. And what we've got to do, this is one of the reasons that we've swapped out the annuities for the majority of the clients' bond holdings. One of the other knock-on effects of that unprecedented action they took is an accumulation of debt unlike the world has ever seen. We know that debt is the problem. We know it's going to continue to be the problem. And I will not accept the safe part of our client's portfolio owning that debt, which is what bonds are. They're debt. And any advisor out there that is adhering to the typical 60-40, 40% of your net worth in bonds, they're asleep at the wheel. And not only are the annuities going to give us a better performance, but it's enhanced safety. And I don't want to get off on an annuity spiel, but just these are the reasons. And if you guys think, and look, this is independent of Trump. Trump's doing everything he can. He inherited a bad hand. He's making it as great as possible. But what I can promise you is that the bill will come due. We're going to pay the piper. And I actually think that there's a high probability that bonds will be far more toxic than owning stocks. The right stocks, anyway. And yet, you know, we spend so much time focused on the market because I think that's what freaks people out, and I get it. But we're living in the matrix. We have to do things differently. And like I said, just go back to those bullet points. Don't be like the frog in water, the year of the frog. Mark Yusko talked about that on our show. Don't just stick your head in the sand and keep doing the same thing. We got to make hay while the sun is shining, so we need that increased upside performance in your portfolio, but we got to do it safely. Because the music could stop at any time. Remember, debt's like firewood. The higher we stack it, the hotter it burns. And we have to be cognizant of the fact of whether we like it or not, we did take the blue pill. We are still asleep as a society, but as individuals, we don't have to be. And you may think this is hyperbole. I wish it was. But what I know is that no matter how high you can throw a ball, it will eventually come down. The bill will come due. And that must be reflected in your retirement plan. And if you want to know how we're doing that for clients, give us a call, 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. You can get our free booklet, Common Sense. You can email us by going to the website, knowyourriskradio.com, and we'll just show you how we do things. We'll put your portfolio up against how we do it, and we compare and contrast. We can lower cost, increase performance, and drastically reduce risk. It's worth your time. Anyway, thanks for joining. We got to run. We're out of time. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you next week. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
Thanks for listening to Know Your Risk Radio. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Schedule your free risk review at knowyourriskradio.com. Tune in next week to Know Your Risk Radio with your host, Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.